Natasha Hunt, or Mo to her friends, is a World Cup winning England rugby player. Last year, she lifted the league title as co-captain with Gloucester and is currently representing England again in the Guinness Women's Six Nations.
The beauty about rugby, it's for all shapes and sizes. So for me, yeah, I don't kind of see it like that. I just absolutely love the sport. I've loved it ever since I started playing.
I feel like there's a really strong team spirit in your unit. Is that a thing that you've worked really hard to achieve, or is that something that sort of evolved naturally over the years?
The only thing I could control in that moment was how I played the game. Like, you learn from failure so much, and I think people shouldn't be scared of failure. There's always a reason behind everything, and to get to the root of that, you'll then get the best out of people.
OK, Mo, let's start with the world's most obvious question. Why are you called Mo when your name is Natasha?
So my dad, when I was younger, apparently held me as soon as I was born and said, "Isn't she a little Mo?" And then it just stuck from there. So, yeah, just always grown up being called Mo. Mum, when I was younger, would shout at Natasha, and that's when I knew I was really in trouble. But other than that, it's been Mo my whole life, really.
We had a bit of a giggle before we came on air in this pod about the fact that we're both a bit vertically challenged. Now, bearing that in mind, the last place I'd put myself is on a rugby pitch, but you apparently not so. So what on earth makes somebody who's little want to put themselves in mortal danger on a rugby pitch?
Mortal danger, I'm not sure I buy into that one, but my granddad, when I first started playing, always said the bigger they are, the harder they fall, and that's kind of the mantra I've always lived by. Like, it's just, yeah, I played netball for ages when I was little and I never got further than county because of my height, and always came back to my height, which I hated. I hated that was a thing. And the beauty about rugby, it's for all shapes and sizes. So for me, yeah, I don't kind of see it like that. I just absolutely love the sport. I've loved it ever since I started playing. So kind of just run with it.
Have you never felt intimidated by it? Have you never felt intimidated by going up against those girls that are bigger and stronger and, you know, full of force?
I don't think so. Like, obviously, I know that I'm not going to make dominant hits. So some things that we get targeted on and that we get statted on are hitting people backwards. Like, I've never been able to do that. Playing for club is actually a bit demoralising because I've got someone in my team called Neve Jones, who's even smaller than me, plays hooker, and she genuinely is probably the biggest dominant hitter in the league. So I don't even have the excuse of my size that that's the reason that I can't hit people backwards. It's all on timing, really. Like, if you know how to time it well and be able to keep feet in the ground and stuff, you can also get those dominant shots, but it's just something that I've never really been able to do. But no, in terms of intimidated, not really. Like, I'm so competitive that whoever I'm up against, in my head, I just back myself and I'm like, I'm going to do my best to get you on the floor no matter what. So yeah, it's almost like you don't want to let the girls down rather than worry about anything like that.
Have you always been this super competitive person? Has this been something that you've sort of born with or something that you developed? I mean, how do you think it sort of came to pass that you ended up being a professional rugby player?
I've definitely always been super competitive. I don't know if it is something you're born with. I'm not sure if it's like innate in you, but I grew up with two sisters. Mum had three of us under three, so we were very close in age growing up, and my whole childhood was just a competition, to be honest. Like, we'd be walking home from school and my big sister would just absolutely bolt at one point whenever she thought she could beat us, basically. Like, it would be quite close to home, like not far enough away that I actually had chance to track her down or whatever. And yeah, we just like end up racing out of nowhere, and she was kind of always someone that I grew up looking up to, but also someone that was really, really driving that competitive edge. We had a bike ride once when we were younger, and I remember I beat her to the top, so I kind of stayed behind her like all the way, and then just before the end I absolutely rinsed it, like went past her at the top of the hill, and she genuinely got off and pushed the bike home. I don't think she went back on a bicycle for 2 years post that, because she was that competitive, and it was a good 45 minute walk home, like it wasn't around the corner. So yeah, that kind of gives you an insight into the way that I grew up and what my sisters were like growing up. But yeah, I love it, to be fair. I love the competitive edge. I love everything being a competition, so can't complain.
I suppose it also alludes to the fact that you are able to think smarter. You've got to think around what your skill sets are and what you've naturally got to go with. And I guess that means that your approach, and I know that you and I both probably agree with this, we don't like the little thing to hold us back in any way. We actually see that as an advantage as much as anything else, and we've turned it to our advantage. I guess that's a superpower, right? That you're able to actually think smarter. And take that competitive edge where you can take the think smarter approach into your rugby play.
100%. I definitely say that I try to outthink like everything. Even if we've got a little game, so at the minute in camp we've got four teams, just to promote like a little bit of competitiveness. And we're Team Yellow, and fortunately we've won most of it. But yeah, it's just, how do you beat the game? Like whenever someone's explaining a law or a rule or whatever, I'm always trying to figure out how we beat it, like what's the best way to beat it, and how you then get everyone else on the same page as you to be able to beat that game. I genuinely love it. I think having stayed in the game for as long as I have is definitely a credit to the mindset and how I try and analyse a game and read a game, and the amount of stuff that I do behind the scenes to try and work out opposition or work out how I can be better at what I do, or I can get there quicker, that sort of thing. So I definitely say like the way that I try and over analyse and anticipate stuff has kept me here for the amount of time I've been here, for sure.
So what does that look like? Because you're co-captain of your club team, and obviously you're part of the England setup as well. So how do you go about over-analysing as an athlete? How does that actually manifest itself in a preparation perspective, and also during and after?
Well, I think during and after, like within the game, I think it came to fruition for me the 2020-21 season. So we actually played through COVID, the second year of COVID, but we weren't allowed to play with scrums. So instead of a scrum, you just had a free, like a tap, and you played. And I didn't realise how much I missed scrums in the game, because that for me is where you get the tactical advantage. A line out obviously always comes from the side. So you've got one attacking line against one defensive line. Whereas when you've got a scrum, it could be anywhere on the field. And the manipulation you can do with the backfield and the defence of the opposition team is massive. And I love that. I love the tactician bit of it, and trying to outthink and outwork your opposition. I realised how much that I actually do like work it out within game and try and like manipulate defenders and manipulate what we're doing in attack to get the upper hand. Co-captaining with Zoe Allcroft is an absolute pleasure. Like, she is such a golden girl. She's one of my best mates, will be for life. And we see the game quite similar, so it helps. But yeah, I think just being in that space for so long allows you to be able to work out what might happen, because you've got so many hours under the belt of being able to do it and being able to work out like either in the game or then after. And then video analysis is massive for me. Every week I sit down with my coach, Sean Lynn, and we'll literally go through minute by minute of the game, like not only my game, but the decisions that I take as captain, or the decisions that we take as a backline of trying to put our team in the best place possible. So it just allows me to become super aligned to what he's thinking and how he wants us to play the game. And similarly in England, like sat down last night with one of my coaches even just to go over one of the training sessions. So I think for me it's the analysis, but not only of myself with the players around you, but then also of like the coaches, to make sure that there's that alignment through, just so it's quite seamless.
With that sort of meticulous, dedicated attention to detail approach, how on earth did you juggle that when you weren't professional or fully professional? Because you've been through this most amazing metamorphosis and transformation in the game, where it has gone from being an amateur sport to a professional sport. So how did you do that? Because in the early days, you would have been a teacher as well at the same time and sort of making all of this work.
I actually don't know how I did, but I think... So both my sisters now have kids, and I think I'd almost like liken it to being a mum. Like, you don't realise that you can do stuff like on 2 hours sleep or whatever. I'm not by any means saying that I do that, but I think you just always find a way. When it's something that you really care about and that you need to get done, you'll find time and you'll find a way to do it. But yeah, I feel so fortunate that I was in the amateur era and then have seen the transition into the professional era. Like, my lifestyle previously was crazy. I was like training before work, working a full day, doing after school clubs, heading to training in the evening, getting home, marking and planning for the next day and living that on repeat. So I've kind of lived through that era and then have come into this. So it's almost easier now, to be honest, because I remember back in the day when I was playing sevens, I used to have like a scrum half tracker and I would know what foot the preference of the scrum half I was playing against would step off, whether their pass was better, whether they were a weaker defender one side or the other, all of these kind of things that I would literally go through all of their games leading into that Olympic campaign just to see like how much detail I could get on the opposition and kind of be aware of that. So I've always been that way. I think I've always tried. I'm almost like a try hard, like I'd probably try too hard sometimes and sometimes I just need to relax, which is what I'm a lot better now in my older age. But I think if you can prep as well as you can, then anything that gets thrown at you, you're kind of ready for, or you know that you've done everything you can to be ready for. So it kind of puts you in that like secure, safe space that there's nothing more you could have done, if that makes sense.
You've been so successful with England. I mean, England are so dominant in the game. I mean, is that something that, what have you sort of learned from that, from sort of joining the England setup and sort of seeing it through and then watching the younger girls come through? What are you able to impart? What like gems of wisdom are you able to share with them just so that they get the most out of their England and national experience?
I think physics is probably the biggest one. Like, we are so blessed with a massive forward pack and unbelievably powerful girls, but also girls that have a ridiculous skill set. So when you combine all of that, it's so hard to defend against us because at any time someone can run over the top of you, probably get the offload away, but also make you sit down and come out the back of it. So we're just unbelievably difficult to defend, I'd say. And then obviously when you've got speedsters on the wing like Jess Breach, Ellie Kildare and Abby Dow, like you're just like, we're blessed everywhere. And to be honest, it's a privilege to be part of. I think the more people that play the game as they're younger, the better we'll be, because there's a bigger player pool to pick from. The skill sets get trained more and more at the minute. So you're seeing it now with the youngsters coming through. The standard of even like the college girls at the moment is unbelievable. England 18 are absolutely smashing it up as well. So I think that it's only going to get better, but ultimately being able to read those pitches in front of you is massive. And being strong and powerful is absolutely huge. Like, no matter what your size is, you can still survive at this level if you're a smart thinker, as long as you've got the attributes to be able to like have the skill set, if that makes sense. So whatever you're kind of lacking, just make sure you pick up on in somewhere else. That's probably what I'd say. And owning your super strength as well for the youngsters coming up, I think there's nothing like belief in the game. If you believe in yourself, if you believe in what you're doing and those around you, then I think you become quite a powerful force. And that's something that I'd like everyone to kind of take away.
I feel like there's a really strong team spirit in your unit. Is that a thing that you've worked really hard to achieve, or is that something that sort of evolved naturally over the years?
Two very contrasting environments in terms of that. So in our Gloucester Hartbury setup, we don't speak about culture. We don't, like, we spend no time on it at all. We all just love each other. Like, there's such a camaraderie amongst the girls. We've been through some rough times. Like, I think for 2 years we were the Nerly team. 2 or 3 years we always were fourth, fifth place, kind of missed out on playoffs, never really did it. And then we brought in, to be fair, we brought in a few powerful girls, and it just changed the game for us. But we managed to keep the whole team together. And so we've kind of grown through all of these moments together, and it's just made us stronger. Like, we enjoy each other's company on and off the field. And yeah, for me, like, that's massive. Whereas in the England squad, we definitely spend an awful lot of time on it. We spend a load of time on our culture, our mindset, trying to bring everyone together, trying to be like good people, all of that sort of thing. And we talk a lot about it. We talk a lot about our stories, where we come from, why we do it, all of that sort of stuff. So I don't know what's right, I don't know what's wrong. I think it takes a lot longer to not talk about it and let it breathe naturally. And obviously we get thrown together with England, we don't have a load of time, so I do understand why we do it that way here. But yeah, two very contrasting ways to do it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, that, isn't it? And I wonder if it is because, like you say, it's a, you know, you don't have the time. And it's not the regularity and the consistency of being in each other's lives all of the time that you've got with the Gloucester piece, which allows you to sort of just naturally build that culture. And like you say, not have to talk about it all the time. The England piece is also a responsibility bit as well, isn't it? It's a roles and responsibilities and being role models. I mean, what's your sort of take on that and how you have to manage that? Because it's not just enough to be really great at what you do these days. You have to be, you know, present on social media. You have to be a role model for the younger generation. I mean, gone are the days when you could just throw caution to the wind and just play the game that you love. So how have you sort of had to sort of adapt to that? And especially as the England team's become even more successful and the attention that garners.
To be honest, I'm terrible, if I'm honest. Like, I know that I need to be better. No, I am, though, in all seriousness. It's not something that I enjoy necessarily. Like, some of the girls are brilliant and they absolutely love it. I think I'm a serial overthinker, so I'm always like, oh, people probably don't want to know what I'm up to. I also am quite a sarcastic human. Like, my humour is a bit on the edge at times, so I wouldn't want anyone to portray me like in an arrogant way or anything like that. So I'd overthink that as well, because quite often I'd say something as a joke and I'm like, if you don't know me, I don't know if you know that I'm joking right now. So, yeah, it's definitely something that I'm trying to almost take the shackles off and be a bit braver with. So it's definitely a learn for me, because I think people do care. Like, those that follow you do care. They want to know what you're up to. I've got, like, so many lovely people that all slide into the DMs or say, like, well done, or really, like, back you in everything you're doing, especially what happened through that World Cup piece last year. There were so many people that reached out, which I'm forever grateful for, and I genuinely love people. I think the bit that overwhelms me is the time that I have to even speak to my friends or my family, let alone try and, like, be there for everybody else, if that makes sense. That's the bit that I feel the pressure on, for sure. But it's definitely something that I want to be better at and that I am trying to be better at, let's say.
Sport is so binary, isn't it? It's basically win or lose. And you got to roll with the punches, whichever way that goes. So tell me about that World Cup piece and sort of, you know, your emotions during that time.
How long have you got? It wasn't a nice time for me. It's probably the worst time in my life, to be honest. So for those that don't know, I didn't make the World Cup squad, just like in 2021, the delayed 2020 World Cup. And it wasn't something I was kind of expecting. It was a bit of a shock to me, to be honest. And I think that's the bit that hit me the hardest. And again, like, not because I'm arrogant or like I back myself, but I think when you're in that environment, you have to have a level of belief. And I genuinely believed that I was good enough to be there. I think most of the rugby world seemed to have agreed, which almost made it harder because everyone was so lovely and so many people reached out, but I just didn't have words because I didn't necessarily understand. And that for me was probably the hardest bit. Probably didn't deal with it in the best way. I just buried my head. I couldn't really watch any of the games. I wasn't really there for some of my closest mates who were competing. Like, my whole heart wanted them to win and to be the best and to see Sarah Hunter lift that cup. Like, that, nothing would have made me happier than to see that. But to actually be on the end of the phone and hear about the camp life and be able to be a support network for those that I was closest to, I really, really struggled with, to be honest. So, yeah, I just buried my head. But in doing that, I actually found so much love and respect for the girls that were at Gloucester Hartbury. So I ended up playing in the cup. Was left at home. We had such a good time. The girls rallied around me so unbelievably well. And it just made me feel so special, I think. And that, for me, got me through. So again, that support network was just unbelievable.
And how do you sort of bounce back from that when that's happened and it's sort of some a decision that's been taken out of your hands? How do you kind of bounce back and how quickly can you bounce back from something like that? What's the best way of doing it?
I think the best way of doing it is... But I think that what I did was actually probably one of the best ways of doing it. So we came back at the end of the year. We won the league. We came second in the league, but we won the cup. We managed to... Zoe and I lifted the cup at the end of the year. I think it was semi a pity vote from a lot of the girls in the Prem, but I ended up as Prem Player of the Year as well. So there was nothing more I could have done in terms of to put my hand up and say, I'm still here, like, I've still got this and I still want this, if that makes sense. But it was definitely a decision that I had to make. Like, it was a mindset shift, whether I because I was 32 at the time, I believe. So I didn't know whether it was going to be, we don't want you now, we're not going to want you again. So I kind of just got my head down and wanted to prove a point with it, I guess. Just be like, I'm still here, like I'm still fighting and I still really, really want this, because playing for England means everything to me. So I guess in life, in everything you do, you kind of are faced with crossroads at times, and it's like you either stand up and fight or you kind of let that decision or that occasion take over. And I'm too stubborn and I'm too competitive, and I was not willing to let that occasion take over, and I just had so much fight left in me, and I thought, at least if I go down showing what I'm about, and I can get people talking about that, if that makes sense. So yeah, I just ruffled my sleeves up, put my ego to the side, and just went after it. And I'm so glad that I did, because I'm absolutely loving the setup now. I'm really enjoying being back with the girls. I love the girls to pieces. Gloucester girls were unbelievable that whole year, and I'm definitely grateful for all of those around me that helped it happen.
I also wonder if it kind of makes it somewhat sweeter to be back in the fold now, kind of having gone through that experience. It's pretty shitty at the time, isn't it? But actually, the other side of it, and now it's turned out the right way, the fairy tale ending, it's probably quite a, you know, a sweet feeling.
Do you know what it is? I think, what's that saying? Like, you don't know what you've lost till it's gone or whatever. But it made me realise, like, there's been a few times in my career that I've realised, like, how much this means to me and how much I want it. And while I'm still playing, I'm still enjoying my rugby and I'm going all right, like, I will always put my hat in the ring to play in England in an England shirt, because it is, like, I love it. Like, representing my country is so special, like, running out, singing the anthem, being in the change room with the girls, just being around people that push themselves as hard as these girls do weekly, daily, and also the coaches. It's like, it's an unbelievable feeling, and yeah, it's definitely sweeter. Like, when we were out in New Zealand, we obviously went back out to New Zealand for WXV, and a lot of the girls really struggled because it was back in the place that they'd lost the World Cup, and obviously, like, facing the world champions on in their own backyard and stuff. Like, a lot of the girls, they did have, like, we had a few meetings about their mindset going into it, but they were class. Like, everyone just got their heads down and wanted to almost right some wrongs for us and to be part of that journey. Like, when I had my that cup in my hands at the end, my mum and dad were out there as well. They actually flew out for the World Cup, so mum left her job to go out there to support, and to be back out there with them again and then have the cup. Like, there's loads of photos of me crying, basically, like, with Sarah Hunter, like, leaning on her shoulder, obviously out there in the coaching role. But it meant so much to me to be back there, and to get that win was everything. Like, I know both squads are changed and all of that sort of thing, but at the end of the day, like, England beat New Zealand in New Zealand, and I was part of that, and I was dead proud to be part of that, for sure.
Comparisons are always made between male sport or men's sport and women's sport. Do you need a different support system to the men competing at this level or not? Is it comparatively the same? What do you get, or what do you need that maybe on top of what the guys get, or is it all very, you know, everyone just needs the same stuff? I'm just wondering, from a, you know, from a physical perspective, from a mental perspective, what's in place that is, you know, unanimous across the board? And then also, is there anything else?
You don't know, because I've no idea of the setup with the men. I'd like to think it's very similar. I'd like to think that, especially like in an international context, we get the same sort of stuff, because at the end of the day, we're both performance elite athletes. And if there's a performance enhancement, like, oh, we've seen the boys in the cryotherapy, for example, or like infrared saunas, that sort of stuff, if that's something that has a performance benefit and is something that we're striving for, then it should be the same for women. I don't see as a physiological difference that performance benefit wouldn't help both, if that makes sense. I think there's something to be said for psychologists in sport. I think the right psychologist is speaking to the right people that you can open up to and be able to have those conversations, not just when you're rock bottom, not just when you're really struggling, like, when to keep yourself in a good mindset and to work through different things is also a massive benefit. But yeah, there's definitely comparisons to have. I don't think that there's a massive difference. Like, obviously, I've never been around a male environment, so I'm not sure, but I imagine that the mindset piece and being able to come back and go again is very similar. Like, if you just take myself and Danny Kerr, for example, like, our journeys are very similar. in terms of coming out of squads, coming back into squads, that sort of thing. Like, he's obviously picking on a little bit now, but still playing some unbelievable rugby. And that for me is massive as well. Like, I hate when age is brought into it, because if you're still performing at a level where you're one of the best and you're competing with people and you're still doing your job, then I don't think your age is relevant. Until your age becomes relevant, then it's probably not even age. It's when you slow down or when you're not fit enough or anything. That's like a physiological thing. It's nothing, like, to me, age gets banded about quite a bit. And like, it is a joke with the girls, like, oh, the old girls, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. But at the same time, like, come and catch me. Do you know what I mean?
And I think actually, like you say, you and Danny Kerr, it's an interesting one, isn't it? It's kind of, it's a really great, like, lesson to the others not to give up if it does go wrong at any one point for them, because there's always a way back if you're mentally in the game, isn't there? There's always a way you can get yourself back in the mix. It's not just done forever, or it doesn't need to be done forever. There can always be a way forward.
100%. And I think that was the one thing when, like, previously, the only thing I could control in that moment was how I played the game. Like, if I could play to the best of my ability and I could show everyone that I still had it, that's the only thing I can control. I can't control anyone else, how they think about me, what they feel about me, everything else. But the thing that I can do is show up when I'm training, when I'm playing, and do my best. And that was the thing that I went after. And I think it's the same for Danny Kerr. Like, what, I can't remember the little reel that Oogs did for him was something like he'd been out of the game for 4 years or 6 years from one Six Nations to another. And, like, it's just incredible. And genuinely, he inspires me. Like, I think I messaged him the other day just to be like, you inspire me, mate. Like, absolutely class work. And but he does. Like, it's something to go after. And he's doing it at 37. And that's a few years on me. So I'm like, well, let's keep going. Do you know what I mean? And I've
you
seen
got
it.
Acres
seen it.
Of
it's
time.
A real life example. Exactly. Like, it's a real life
of
example
time,
of that. That's how I feel. Like, if I'm, but I have to be enjoying it. That's the thing. Like, if I'm enjoying it, I'm playing better rugby. And that's what I'm going after now, because I think in my career, that's the bit that I've learned is really important for me to do my best, is that enjoyment element. And I wish I'd done it sooner. I wish I hadn't tried as hard when I was younger, because by trying, you tense up, like, everything's a bit harder work, and then you get in your own head. Whereas now, if I make a mistake, it's just brushed off and I'm like, okay, we're here, we're competing, let's go. And that to me is massive.
That's just experience, isn't it? And the naivety of youth as well. It's kind of the things that people say to you, oh, what would you tell your younger self? There's so much, but you kind of got to go on that own, your own journey, haven't you? You got to sort of forge your own path, and there will be mistakes and bad experiences along the way. How much do you think failure has taught you over success?
So much. I think you learn so much more from failure. Like, when you win, you don't really analyze as hard. Like, that's something that I've learned as a coach, as a player, and something that I try and take on in my own journey. Like, I will analyse every game the same, whether I win, lose or draw now, because it's really important. Even if those decisions have come off and you've ended up winning, like, were there better things you could have done, or is there something else in it that you can learn from? And also, on the flip of that, I'll go into games thinking, if I was them, how would I try and stop us? And what is it that they're going to come after? Because quite often, especially playing in the Gloucester Hartbury shirt, they're coming after you as the nine, like, they're coming after and trying to stop you at source. So yeah, it's massively important. And I think that you learn from failure so much. And I think people shouldn't be scared of failure. I think there's a massive, like, fear element of failing or putting yourself out there and not quite being good enough. But you will learn so much more from that than you will from going and winning every game, or from holding back and never knowing whether you could have gone that extra bit and stuff. So yeah, it's definitely a lot to be said for that.
Have you always been a leader?
No, not by name, if that makes sense. So I've not always been a captain. I've not always been somebody that's, like, yeah, got the accolade of that sort of thing. But I'd like to think that I've always been someone that people can come to, or that, like, the way I lead is to try and get the best out of people. So, like, trying to understand people is the first and most important thing. Like, what makes you tick? What is your goal? What is your driver? If you're losing your head, how do I get you back? That sort of thing. But also, like, trying to get the best out of people. Like, the way that we play at Gloucester Hartbury, obviously speaking like that, because that's where I lead with Zoe Allcroft, is like, nobody's going out to make a mistake. No one ever goes on the pitch and tries to make an error or tries to make a miss a tackle or tries to knock a ball on. So it's about trying to understand why that's happened and then being able to switch straight out of it and be like, right, what's our next job? Or how do we fix that in the moment? And yeah, that's just kind of how I've always been. I think having that personable approach for me is leading, like making sure that I know people and trying to get the best out of people. That for me is leadership. And I'm fortunate enough that I've grown up around that. Like my mum and grandma are brilliant people. Like they've always brought the best out of us. And that's something that I'd try and do. But I think I try and do it no matter what title I have or where I sit within a squad. Like I'd like to think every squad I've been part of, hopefully people feel like they can come to me or I'll try and be the one with the arm around and bring people up, if that makes sense. But yeah, I do enjoy it. Like I enjoy the little micro conversations with the referee. I think a lot of people will see that if they watch me play, or oppositions hate that when they play against me. But it's almost like a game within a game, trying to work out what they're seeing, how they're doing it, and then build that rapport with them so that you can like basically just do what they want from you. Like make sure that you're showing them the pictures that they want, make sure that you're going after the right things, that sort of thing. Yeah, I really do enjoy that.
Talk a lot about culture and how you kind of create a culture. Can you create a culture, or is it just something that exists and sort of develops and grows over time?
And I think it just exists. I'm very much along the line of Sean Lim with it. I think the more you try and talk about it and force it, the more that it's like not really a culture. It's just like not necessarily words, but something that you just are all living by. But I think if you can genuinely like enjoy people's company or know the best, like get the best out of people, and everyone's just trying to be a good person in that, then that's how you breed that culture, if that makes sense. Like I said, like people aren't going out trying to be horrible to each other or anything like that. If there's a slip of the tongue or someone gets frustrated in a moment, it's always like, why are they frustrated? Because there'll be a reason behind it. Like, is there something going on in the background or that sort of thing? I think I've just been brought up like that. Like my mum was a teacher previously. I was a teacher. And I think like I liken it to having a naughty kid in the class. So if you've got someone that's playing up quite a bit for you in the class, there's probably something in that. They're not trying, like they probably just need a bit of attention, or there's something going on that they need to be spoken to, and it needs to be something that you work out with them. Like, yeah, it's definitely the way that I've kind of been brought up, is there's always a reason behind everything, and to get to the root of that, you'll then get the best out of people, if that makes sense. So, yeah, if that answers your question. I'm not sure I even answered your question then, but...
Yeah, but you're trying to get the best out of them from, like, sort of, like you say, sort of a team ethos way, but also you've got to get the best out of them in terms of performance. So how do you sort of marry up the two, and how do you end up with a seriously high performing, consistent setup? I mean, you have that with England, right? There is a seriously high performing setup there, and you are winning more than you're losing by some margin. And the opposition are finding you hard to break down. So how do you create that? I mean, there is such a thing as there not as a winning mentality, but you've obviously got to keep feeding it.
Yeah, 100%. I think winning becomes a habit. When you know how to win, it becomes a bit of a habit. And there's so much belief in the squad that actually when your back's against the wall, like, you know you can get the job done. You know you've got so many facets of your game that you can go to. I think competition's huge. I think making sure that people have that drive to be better is massive. So, like, I'm so internally driven that I just want to be the best that I can be. And every time I'm on the pitch, I'm trying to do the best of me. But if you're driven by external things, or if you're driven by that bit of competition, like, that's super important that you've got that. Like, it's a highly competitive group. Everyone is out here to win. Everyone's out here to do the best. And representing England is like one of the greatest accolades. So I don't think you need to have too much drive with that. I think people are so driven for that that it kind of takes care of itself, if that makes sense. And then everyone's just on it. Like, everyone owns their stuff, because you don't want to let the person down, like next to you down. Like, you are out there to put your body on the line for the girls, and everyone along that line is exactly the same. And you kind of know that it's just it's just lived and breathed, if that makes sense. So you kind of, you don't need to talk about that. Like, we know when we're taking that field that we do not want to take a backward step. And that just goes without saying, like, the white war mentality, we're coming and we're just going to keep coming. But it's definitely been harboured over time. Like, the time that I've been involved in the setup, I think it's like 12 years or something now, which is daft. But yeah, it's definitely something that is kind of passed down through the generations and has always stayed quite consistent through my England career.
You're definitely the right person to ask this of. What's a really great thing that you live by every day that other people can learn from you about performance? What is one thing that they can do every day to improve their performance?
I think for me, probably the best thing that I can suggest is surround yourself with good people. Like, where your attention is, your energy will follow. So if your attention is on like loads of negativity or the fact that this person's done that or that person's, like, your energy follows that and it's almost like a sap. So I'm massive on being around good people, being around people that bring me up, being around the girls or speaking to my family or going and see the little ones, because that just resets me. So yeah, I think that's probably why I've been in a place for so long and definitely learned it over time. But even to the point that now sometimes I'll walk away from conversations because I'm like, nah, I just don't want to hear about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you guys can deal with that. Like, I'm going to go and get a coffee or that sort of thing. So, like, owning that space for you and surrounding yourself with good people is huge.
Oh, it's a great thing to live by. Mo, thanks so much. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Not at all. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.